Welcome back, guys. DGS. You see, if you're watching, I'm wearing a new hat. Give a couple of these away. Torchlight Parade is the band is going to be playing at a St. Baldrick's Foundation fundraiser. We have Conrad and Eileen here. I apologize for meeting you and bawling. I'm Scottish, and I just wear my emotions on my sleeves. So I'll get through this. So tell us about Brett. Tell us your story, and tell us what you have coming up and how people can help. So I'm just going to turn it over to you and let you guys talk through it.
Well, first of all, thank you for having us on your
show.
You're
so welcome.
Brett was a perfectly healthy 11-year-old boy. He was at the end of fifth grade. He went to St. Mark's Catholic School in South County. And he suddenly, it was near his 11th birthday, which is the end of May, he started having headaches, really bad headaches. And every once in a while, he would, get sick. He would vomit. And we went to the doctor three separate times, and they told us it was a virus. So each time we'd go, and they would do all kinds of, their tests or whatever they do at the doctor's office. And they would say, we think it's a virus. And then finally, on the last time we went, they said, we'll send you to a specialist, a neurological specialist. So we went there, and he thought he could see something in the back of, just looking in his eyes, but he wasn't sure. And they didn't really want to do an MRI, but then the symptoms escalated, and finally we had an MRI, and it revealed he had a golf ball sized tumor in the middle of his head, which is his thalamus. And unfortunately, it couldn't be removed with regular surgeries. So that whole summer we had a surgery to relieve the headaches, which was, I forgot what they called it.
It was a new procedure that had been developed in the previous few months where our neurosurgeon had learned how to perform the surgery in Africa, actually. So he was able to avoid putting a shunt into Brett's brain. And with this new procedure, he relieved the pressure on his brain that was caused by the cerebral spinal fluid that was causing the headache. So that's how we learned about the tumor. So he had that first surgery to relieve the pressure. The headaches went away, and we started a regimen of chemotherapy and radiation.
And he returned to school in the fall, going to radiation every day for a couple weeks. He never missed school. And then we thought we were okay for a while. And then this tumor started to grow again. So he had one of three, he had three laser surgeries altogether where they burned the tumor instead of doing a regular surgery with like cutting. And they use a laser to ablate the tumor cells. So he had that done. Each surgery cost him use of his right arm. He could use it, but he couldn't button or he couldn't ride anymore with it. The second surgery cost him his right leg. He couldn't walk right anymore. He had to use a brace. And the third surgery, of course, took his speech. So he couldn't really communicate too well. He could say a couple words. We knew what he was communicating, but he couldn't go into long paragraphs. And that was, at that point, that was his eighth grade year and his graduation from grade school. And then he started Bishop DeBerg High School that fall, and everyone was so good to him, although his communication, of course, wasn't as good. He could talk, but...
Was he all there? Could he think? Did he know what was...
Yeah, he could think.
And how did he do with it?
He loved school. He did really well in school. Wow. Brett was very religious, so he relied on his faith a lot, and his make-a-wish was to be a priest. So that was his make-a-wish for a day. I told him, Brett, you sure about that? You sure you don't want to go to Hawaii or something?
Yeah.
But no, he said, they asked him what he wanted to be when he grew up, and he said, I want to be a priest. So the Make-A-Wish girls, they were so good to him, and the Archbishop arranged for him to be at the Chrism Mass and be a server, but they dressed him kind of like a priest, and he got kind of the, you know, gist of it. And but that was very exciting for him. He absolutely loved it. And so I think he relied a lot on his faith. And of course, you know, we never really kind of told him that, like, we always kept positive.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're trying to do this so that, you know, there'll be another trial and keep, we don't know what'll happen, you know.
Yeah.
We never told him really that he was going to pass away. But
yeah.
He knew at the end, you know. But, yeah, that's what he relied on, his faith, I think, a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you were to ask him, he would tell you he was just fine. I think as far as he was concerned, there was nothing wrong. He fought through it, mm-hmm. and he fought. And especially at the beginning, just to look at him, you wouldn't know anything was wrong. It was hard to believe that this kid that you were looking at had brain cancer. I would often think that. We often thought in the beginning that maybe there's a mistake.
Yeah.
Maybe this is not right. Maybe the MRI imaging was wrong and it wasn't something aggressive. But as time went on, as Eileen mentioned, because of the treatment, he had more and more deficits that took their toll on him. But he got up every day, insisted on going to school. And again, if you asked him if anything was wrong, he would say no.
What a kid. And you have four other children?
Oh, we have three other
Three other
kids,
children.
Yes.
And I told you guys, it shows you how selfish I am. I've never had that thought that you have to tell your kids, you have to be there for their grief.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
It's very hard. Very hard because
other
their
than
ages
faith,
at
how do
the
you
time,
navigate that?
Yeah. At the time, like my oldest was 18 months older than him. Mm-hmm. So Brett passed away at 14 and a half, and Olivia was like 16. So it's that age is hard anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
But with this on top of it, and then Andrew was like 8 or 9. And then Ella was like 5 or 6. So it's really, for them, it's really hard, especially the little ones, you know, coming. Ella wasn't there when he passed, but like coming back and like not being there, you know.
Yeah.
It's really, and then we're grieving at the same time. So it's hard for us to explain everything. And then it's just a really difficult time.
You forget about your other kids in a way because they're pretending like everything's okay. They're still trying to hang out with their friends. And frankly, we never had a conversation with the family as a whole to discuss Brett's illness. So I sometimes wonder if the younger ones were shocked by his passing because they were so young, you couldn't really have a conversation with them about a terminal illness.
Yeah.
Right.
The older one, Olivia, she was a teenager, so she did some research online and realized how devastating this disease was and what her brother was facing.
I know it's an aggressive form. Is it rare?
Relatively rare. It's one of the more common of the solid tumors that children will develop. It's similar to a grade 4 glioblastoma. That's been in the news for the past few years with Senator Kennedy, Senator McCain, Bo Biden, the president's son. They all passed away from a glioblastoma. That's a grade 4 brain tumor. Brett's was a grade 3. Still very aggressive, though.
One grade
lower, but it was still very aggressive and took on some of the same characteristics as a grade 4 in terms of the aggressiveness.
How long did it take you guys to begin trying to turn this into something helpful the way you're doing now?
Well, the first year we were so overwhelmed with treatment, keeping doctor's appointments, juggling life, caring for the other kids, pretending like everything was okay, just trying to live a normal life. We didn't have an opportunity to look into opportunities to help other people and to help fund research. We were worried about taking, you know, administering the chemo and going to radiation. In 2015, a group of Brett's friends And their parents formed a head shaving team with the St. Baldrick's Foundation, which we had never heard of prior to that.
Can you tell people about it if they've not heard of it, like what it is basically?
Sure. Yeah, the St. Baldrick's Foundation is a volunteer and donor power charity committed to supporting the most promising research for pediatric cancer. It's a wonderful charity. It's the largest private funder of childhood cancer research grants in the world. No one gives more money to pediatric cancer research grants outside of the National Cancer Institute. So it's a wonderful charity that funds projects all across the country, including here in St. Louis. And we decided that we needed to be involved with this charity so we could raise money and raise awareness and funding for childhood cancer research.
And what are you guys doing now? What's the upcoming event that you're having?
Well, it's the 5th annual Rock for Brett Concert for a Cause benefiting childhood cancer research. All the funds we raise from our event go to the St. Baldrick's Foundation. It's a concert event. It's going to be a wonderful event with four different acts. We've got JoJo Mattia coming in. She's a performer from Arizona, wonderful voice and a beautiful young lady. We have Aragon, a group of teen musicians from St. Louis. They were finalists in this year's St. Louis Teen Talent Competition at the Fox Theater.
Nice.
Incredible group of kids, wonderful musicians. We have the Nightmare and Alice Cooper Experience, who puts on a great show.
There you go, Wheels.
There we go. I'm in.
Mm-hmm. And then the headliners, Torchlight Parade, the Engel Brothers, Doug and Matt Engel, and they put this band together years ago, and in 2021, when the Helen Fitzgerald's head shaving event went virtual, the guys from Torchlight Parade, Matt and Doug, approached me and said, "We're having a party we're playing at. We've already talked to the host of the party. He wants to open his home to." Our concert to make it a charity event, and we want all the proceeds to go to the St. Baldrick's Foundation, and then it grew from there.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the CD over there, Wheels? It's right up your alley.
I have to take a listen. Oh, there you go.
Right?
There we go. That's the right image.
That's a Wheeler band.
Yeah. Looking forward to hearing that. I'm going to Google it.
Very nice. Any advice you can give either to parents like me who have not experienced this but fear it, or parents who are currently going through it?
Well, be an advocate for your child. If you've got any concerns at all, don't be shy about bringing those concerns to your pediatrician. Trust your instincts, trust your gut, insist on the additional test. If you think an MRI is in order, sit down and talk with your doctor about that. I think Eileen would agree with that.
Yes. We always thought, you know, that can't happen to us because we are so like just a normal family, you know, and it just all of a sudden happened. And I mean, the doctors, they don't know everything. So you kind of have to advocate for if you know that something's just not right.
Mm. Yeah.
And for parents going through it right now, I would suggest to them to do the same thing that Eileen did that first summer.
Oh.
Get second opinions. Don't be shy about calling hospitals across the country, which is what she did. She was on the phone, online, every day reaching out to oncologists, some of the best institutions in the country. And it turned out the best care was right here in St. Louis, at St. Louis Children's Hospital. Brett had gifted oncologists, brilliant neurosurgeons. He actually had two neurosurgeons. They're geniuses. And the surgeries that she was describing earlier, they're called LIT procedures. And they left Brett with deficits, but without those procedures, we wouldn't have had him as long.
Right. Yeah.
So just know, I would tell any parent out there going through this, especially in the early stages, there's research going on right now that we'll find, if not a cure in the next few years, at least a better treatment. And there are gifted doctors out there working right now on a cure or a better treatment. So don't give up hope and be an advocate for your child.
So if people want to be a part of this, go to the concert or donate something, how do they do it?
You can go to the St. Baldrick's Foundation website, stbaldricks.org, and go into the search bar and search for Rock for Brett. It's got information about the event. It's got a donate button, which you can donate to the Rock for Brett Concert for a Cause. Again, all the money we raise goes to the St. Baldrick's Foundation, a 501c3 charity. Anyone in the area who is on Facebook and reach out to us through Rosaries for Brett, that's on Facebook, express your interest in coming to the show. We'll write your name down as a special guest, or we can mail you a ticket. We've got some tickets left, and there are tickets available at the door, too. So if you're not able to get a ticket in advance, but you realize at the last minute that you do want to come to the show and help support this event, you can come to the show and get a ticket at the door and come in.
Anything else you want to get out there? Anything you want to say to people?
I just want to say that St. Baldrick's Foundation is an excellent charity, and it fills in the money needed to raise for childhood cancer research, because the government only gives for over 126 different kinds of childhood cancers. We just get, I think, 4% of the national money for research.
Yeah.
So for all those different childhood cancers, that's all they get. And the childhood cancers are differently treated than adult cancers. So an adult brain tumor and a child brain tumor are different things. So that's why it's so important to raise money with these different charities that can give money towards childhood cancer research, like St. Baldrick's.
Very good. Thank you, guys. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Well, mercifully, we only have about 30 seconds here in this break after meeting Conrad and Eileen. Incredible people.
Yeah.
Incredible family.
Yes.
Just so impressive. Yes. So strong.
And if you would like to attend their events for St. Baldrick's, we have a link up on the Dave Glover Show Facebook page right now.
I think we're all going to go as a show. If we all have that day.
Sounds like it's open.
Yeah, let's do it.
And you listen to the band.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Sounded good, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. You know what I was thinking about politically? See if you guys pick up the vibe, if you understand what I'm saying, if you agree or disagree. And this is not coming from like a PhD in political science, right? It seems to me that for the past 25 years, since I've been on the air, it's about the time it started. It could be that that's just the time that I woke up or the time that I grew up and I started noticing things like that, because I didn't care much about politics before then. I had no skin in the game. Wasn't a big deal. But it seems to me that everyone is trying too hard. Just, they're trying too hard to engineer something that I don't believe can or should be engineered. Stop trying to force people to be religious. Stop trying to force people to be non-religious. Stop trying to force people to be gay or not gay or conservative or liberal. You can't force, it's like trying to push a beach ball down in a pool. You can't hold it down forever. It's going to pop up. Americans still have a strong independent streak. We are no longer even close to being monolithic. Women have a much different role than they used to. People of color have a much different role. LGBTQ people have a much different role. The horse is out of the barn. Stop trying to force your social engineering, whether it's right wing or left wing, and just fill the damn potholes, whether it's in St. Louis or it's nationally. That's what I think. How does that hit you? Am I being Pollyannish?
Nails. I mean, like, look, people can advocate for things that they want to do, right? You can participate in groups, religious groups, you know, social groups, whatever it is, to put out whatever message you want, right? That's okay. It's okay for people to be people.
Yes.
The government people
should be doing government stuff.
Yes.
They should be, again, I always, this is why I don't like elevating people. I don't like Mr. Senator or Mr. President. No, you have a name. I'm going to call you by your name. You just have a job where you work for me. I don't know why we need to elevate them, because that's what leads to this stuff. If you're just, this is your job. Your job is to go pass laws to make the people that you represent better. Period, the end. That's the job. Now, are you going to be able to make it better for everyone 100% of the time? No, but you can do the things and spend your time on the things that will benefit the most people. And the social stuff is not going to benefit the most people. The culture wars is not going to benefit the most people.
It's just what get people elected.
But this is what, exactly, because that puts you in your position of power. And what it is a nonstop 24-hour a day, 7-day a week, 52-week a year campaign. You're always just trying to make sure people remember to vote for you. That's how it looks to people like me. I see all of this, and I see that's entirely what you do. Instead of spending the time, and this, again, not 100% blanket statement, every person in D.C., every person in Jeff City, every individual is an individual. They're different. But what we see too much of is the demagoguing and the ideologue stuff, and you're going to play to your base, but you represent people that aren't in your base, too.
About half.
You should have a duty in your mind, just like somebody who signs up to serve in the United States military. They have a duty to do what they're told to follow the law, to protect the United States, to protect their fellow citizens. What they signed up for is that duty. They don't decide, I'm not going to do this for these people or for those people. Their job is to do what they're ordered to do by the people that have put them in positions of power, right? Yeah. We need to run more along those lines, but there's no money in that. There's no staying power in that. So why in the world? You're not incentivized to do that. You're incentivized to do the opposite. You're incentivized to please only the people that are going to vote for you, so they keep voting for you.
Yeah.
And forget the other people. They don't matter.
Yeah, I am personally a non-religious person, but if the government ever came for your church, I'll stand with you.
100%. I'll stand in front of it before the bulldozer gets there. Absolutely. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if it's a religious group that's being attacked by the government or if it's an LGBTQ plus group that's being, it's the same thing. And we don't have the ability often enough. And again, it's our fault, guys. I mean, like, we don't require it of our leaders. Mm-hmm. We don't expect it of them. And we care. We're only happy if they're doing what we want them to do for us. And unfortunately, you know, we've lost a lot of that America. We take care of each other. You know, like, we look out for each other. You don't mess with us. We don't look out for each other unless somebody from the outside attacks us, and then maybe we will.
Maybe.
For a period of time. But then we get back into our same old tribal petty nonsense, because all anybody seems to care about is whether or not they benefit. But when I look at the actions of the federal government, I don't care just about how it affects me. I care about how it affects everyone. If I benefit but 10 other people hurt, I'm not okay with that. But most people are. Most people are like, it's fine. Hey, if I win, I benefit. I don't care what happens to people that don't agree with me. And I don't get that, and I don't understand it. And it's certainly, if you're a person that comes from a religious point of view, Christian point of view, that's not a very Christian attitude. And since we're a majority Christian country, I think that there maybe should be a review of how we interplay politics and religion. Because your book says one thing, and your politics sometimes say another thing.
Well said. Rach, thoughts?
I'm just wondering if you guys think that culture at this point is, okay, do politics reflect culture, or at this point does culture reflect politics? Like, are
the
politicians
second.
Driving the culture at
yes,
this point?
Yes, I think the second.
And I think the only way that can change is, like Wheel said, like, we have elected these people. We have shown the people in power that this is what we want with our votes.
Yeah.
So the only way to change is for us to be better and to stop being so swayed. The reason why the culture wars thing works is because that's what you get emotional about. You get emotional about your identity. It's a lot easier to be like, I disagree with you about who exactly should be filling those potholes. That's a different situation than,
right,
like, your religion, your sexuality, what have you.
Yeah.
So we have to kind of rise above. I'm not saying like, oh, become a zombie and like stop caring. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying we have to be smarter about what we let play on our emotions.
So today's election day in the city, right?
Yeah.
And we've all lived through this over the past few months and years. And I think it was Michael Kelly, this first person who I remember saying that in the city race, that they need to stop with all the highfalutin reparations and social equity and just fill the potholes. And I more and more, since Mike said that, feel the same way about the federal.
Yes.
That they need to worry about the federal national potholes and stop worrying about what people do in their bedrooms and what people do in their churches or not.
Yeah. And stop giving yourself exemptions. Stop making yourself exempt from the rest of the rules the rest of us end up dealing with. You know, why is it okay for you guys to trade on insider information, but if somebody else outside of the political world does it, they go to jail? Mm-hmm. You guys are getting information just by the fact that you're working with lobbyists and writing laws. You know things that are coming down the track, and yet we're, again, it's all us because we care more about winning our fight against our neighbor than we do about winning for everybody. Because mm-hmm. what we should be doing is looking out for each other and not trying to tell the people that we disagree with. And again, I don't care if you consider yourself liberal or conservative. Doesn't matter. It's the same point. You can't, if you're constantly just looking to win, all you're ever going to do is fight. It is all you're ever going to do. And that's what politics is. It's a fight. A fight that can't be won.
So why do we know this? Just a bunch of rodeo clowns on a radio show, and they don't seem to get it in Jeff City, Springfield, and Washington. Or is it that we don't understand?
Oh, I think they get it. I think they're just playing the game that's working right now. Mm. And I'm not sitting here saying, like, the four of us are smarter than everyone else. No, it's just we focus on this because we take in the news and politics and stuff for our job. It's a part of our everyday life. I think the average person is just going to work, you know, taking care of their family, paying bills. They might watch the nightly news,
which might not. All they should have to worry about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's life. We're losing our lives. We're losing the quality of our lives, I think, because, and I apologize in advance for saying this again, but people younger than Rach and Andrew don't remember when life wasn't like this. People like you and I do. We remember when you just lived your life and that was it.
And that was pretty much every generation that came before us, too.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not so much in the
60s. Had their own challenges.
No, I mean, like the 60s, you had upheaval. You know, you had the counterculture. You had a little bit of a mini revolution going on in terms of ideas and how government should be. But I don't know that it was as daily and contentious, like, interpersonally as it is now, where people will, I mean, like, just as an example, right? For a long time, one group of people would abuse people that owned electric cars,
yeah,
whether they were Teslas or others, calling them all kinds of names because you're clearly one of those lefties. And now the opposite's happening. Now people are attacking Teslas because they're saying it makes you a Nazi, you're a fascist. So each side has found a reason to attack the same thing. And it changed in what, a year? A year, one group of people went from mocking anybody who was soft enough to not drive a big old truck and use gas. They're going to mock you because you get your funny little electric car. And now the opposite's happening. Now the people that wanted to save the environment, now they're the ones that are torching Teslas.
Well, also, I don't know what you think's going to happen. No one's going to win.
No, there is no win.
You're not going to, for example, make people stop being gay. You're not. And you shouldn't, but even if you should, you're not. Adult alert here. Did you guys see the new law in Texas they're trying to pass? They're trying to legislate masturbation, that you have to show an ID before you buy a sex toy because it's immoral and against the Bible.
I got a feeling the Bible doesn't have any words about sex toys.
Why don't you give that up? There's my advice. Well, you're not going to win that battle. You're wasting your time. You look stupid.
No, and considering, too, that just the hypocrisy, this is one of the things that has pushed me away from organizations, is the hypocrisy of religious leaders. How many of them do we have to catch in scandals doing all the things they condemn everybody else around them for doing? whether it's affairs or, I mean, a lot of it's old, right? It's old school, but I mean, popes had kids, like dozens of them. And some of those popes had their kids and their kids became cardinals. And like, you're not even supposed to have kids. You're not supposed to get married. You're not supposed to do any of that. Yet you got kids that are in the papal guard and that are cardinals. Like, it's the hypocrisy of people always trying to monitor. And again, it's not just the religious side. That's one side of it. It's just the historical example that you can come up with a real human beings. Go Google the I forget his pope name, but the Borgias, B-O-R-G-I-A. Go look at the Borgia Pope and what his life was and his mistress and the children that he had from that mistress. Again, all while being a cardinal and a pope. That's not to say that it's all that. It's certainly not all that. It's not every religious person. But when you look at the leaders of those groups of people and how often those scandals have come along, is it 100%? No way. It's probably 1%. It might be 3%. It's a small percentage, but it's still the same point. You're policing other people, but the people in your group have some of those same issues too.
Yeah. Yeah, I always say, like, there was a commercial a few years ago where people's credit scores were above their head. And they're just walking down the street. You can see I got a 790. I got a 580.
Right.
And I thought if everyone's sins were listed up there, everyone could see, no one would say anything. No one would judge anyone else.
No, because everybody's got something.
We could know what's going on. And it just seems to me that we're just judging each other based on the fact that the other guy sins differently than you. Your sin is terrible. Mine is understandable. That's the way it feels.
There's also a lot of arrogance in the belief that you're right. No, my way's right. Everyone else is wrong. The Buddhists are wrong. The Muslims are wrong. The atheists are wrong. Or if you're in the other groups, the Christians are wrong. Like, everybody believing that they're right, whether you're an atheist or a religious person, because atheists are that way too. They're convinced you're right. You don't know. There's an arrogance involved in knowing you're right.
Yeah. Monsignor Ted said one of the smartest things ever been said on the show. He said that certitude is the polar opposite of faith. It's the opposite of faith.
I mean,
it's not an article of, it's the opposite of faith.
He's right.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 252. Can you redo that little thing? That was really good.
What's that?
The Kevin Sorbo thing.
I don't know why, but somebody retweeted an older tweet from Kevin Sorbo, who obviously is famous for being a conservative who's from Hollywood, and he said he tweeted that he didn't get blacklisted from Hollywood. He left because they're all pedos. But I'm like, no, you didn't get blacklisted. You just suck. Like, there are a lot of people who share your politics who are still very successful in Hollywood, like John Voight, like Clint Eastwood. They never got blacklisted. You know why? Because they're good.
They're good actors.
You're not the fake Hercules on a CW TV show, and you're not Chachi from Happy Days. You know, like, The people that are talented are working.
It's well said.
You know, and the people that are not, I just find this whole thing, it feels like a lot of cope.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I didn't make it. It's not because I wasn't good.
Yeah.
It's because people don't like my
policies. All those pedophiles in Hollywood.
Right. I mean, again, I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are terrible people. There are terrible people in all kinds of industries. We know the stories that have come out about the executives and the way they've treated actors and child actors, for God's sake. Like, there's terrible stuff there. That's not in dispute.
Yeah.
But yeah, the people that are talented, they tend to stick around, regardless of what their view of the world is.
Robert Walsh says, Dave, you got 3 pages of heavy thoughts you're sharing with us today. What are we going to do for the rest of the week? You're on your own, Bob. This is it. I'm shooting the old Le Wad. So this is all I got for the week. Andrew, what do you got? You had pizza. Did you already share that with us? You had pizza in a different way?
I had some unique pizza.
What'd you have?
Well, I had the Little Caesars pretzel crust.
Hate to brag.
I've had that before.
With the, it's the stuffed pretzel crust.
Okay.
And so when I ordered it, it asked me, do you want, so you want the stuffed pretzel crust, and do you want pizza sauce or cheese? And I was like, well, I don't want crust stuffed with pizza sauce. That sounds disgusting. So I ordered the cheese. What it actually is it was, instead of pizza sauce on the actual pizza, it was like yellow cheese.
Like from a pretzel.
Yeah, kind of like a pretzel cheese, like a beer cheese.
Runny
almost.
Cheese?
Yeah, like
cheese sauce. It wasn't
super
pretzels.
Runny, but so yeah, like a pretzel cheese. It was a big pretzel with more cheese and pepperonis on it.
And?
It was awesome.
Yeah, do you guys do you two remember back at 97.1 we were just like talking about Little Caesars one time.
Oh, do I remember?
I think it was a Little Caesars manager in Fenton. Mm-hmm. I apologize if I'm getting that wrong. And I had his business card for forever.
Damn it.
I lost it. But he delivered us all pizzas, and one of them was the soft pretzel pizza, and it was delish.
Well, if you're listening and you'd like to prove that you were from Fenton or not.
Yeah, give us a call.
Remember, he brought us all our favorite pizza.
Yeah.
Because we went through and said, like, this is my favorite
pizza.
Yeah,
and I don't think I said mine, and he brought me the soft pretzel one as a surprise, and it was so good.
What would yours have been?
Oh, my ultimate pizza is probably... I used to never like meats on my pizza, and now I like my current favorite pizza is a pepperoni and black olive.
Mm.
Yeah.
Stupid COVID ruined pepperoni for me.
Too salty.
Yeah. So I've switched to sausage, but I like a ball of sausage.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Yep. I like a crumbly sausage. I'm overwhelmed.